I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's glorious blue skies over West London.
Yeah.
Probably because all the Manchester United fans in London are happy,
that they got to
see them win away to Brentford on their doorstep.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about that with Mark Ogden. We've got so much else going on because, of course, we also have Chelsea dropping points. Mm. We have my man, Andre Ranocchia, the original Froggy, scoring a dramatic, scoring a peach of a goal. We have Gareth Bale on his way back. Tons to get into. Borussia Dortmund out of the cup.
Yeah.
Plenty more. But, oh, and Spurs' comeback. How could we forget that?
I know. That
was
special,
pretty special,
very
too.
Special.
But let's get right into it with Manchester United. Jules, I'm going to start with you, actually, because... You know, here you move to England and they have these wonderful stereotypes that every country in the world has and these cliches. And, oh, it's a game of two halves. Yeah, this obviously was. United in that first half, I thought, were terrible.
Yeah.
Almost as bad as I've seen them. I've probably seen them play worse, but certainly under Rangnick, this did not look good.
No.
David De Gea had to make two huge saves. They could have easily been down. And then they come out after the break. And there's like a rocket up their backsides, and they score three times.
Yeah, that's a fair summary, Gab. I think they were abject in the first half completely, collectively, individually, the mistakes they made, how much they allow Brentford to put them under pressure with the intensity and everything, and without De Gea, once again, I mean, how many times have we said that this season, but without De Gea, they could have easily been 2, maybe 3-0 down. The second half was much better. I think they benefited from Brentford's dropping the intensity a bit, and also when you score so early in a second half, like the Elanga goal, which is a wonderful goal, by the way, the ball from Fred, but the first touch and the finish from the youngsters, then I think it helps you a lot, because I do think that Brentford are not the same at all when they're behind. Not that they give up, but it's just that already they were on their way down physically. That put even them more down, and then you scored the second pretty quickly after that too. So it was much better from United for sure in the second half. But again, they could not have been worse than the first half.
Augie, when I look back at this game and I look at which Manchester United players stood out, it was funny because for me, arguably the three best players. I know I was watching on BT Sport and they said McTominay was a monster and he was outstanding. They did a good game, I don't think, but. McTominay's one of those guys who's in that category because he's homegrown, and I also think because he's British, that when he does well, he gets more praise. But he did fine. But the guys who stood out were Jogo Dalot, Fred, and Elanga. And we're going to get to Elanga in a minute, but I wanted to ask you about Fred because he's kind of been this figure of fun at Manchester United among many fans and in the media. But he's one of those guys that even through the ups and downs of Rangnick, I think he's actually played quite well. Is it a case that this is one player who's benefited from this manager?
Yeah, I think there's more than one. I think you mentioned Dalot. I think Dalot's benefited too. I think Fred's always going to divide opinion because he does have this tendency to lose control of the ball quite quickly, and he's not very kind of slick on the ball, shall we say. But I think...
Well, unlike McTominay, who's a second period,
no,
or what? Like...
Listen, I agree. I think McTominay has qualities, but I think he needs to be coached better to... You know, accentuate those qualities and avoid the propensity to get booked very often, to kick people too often. I think Fred's a classic case. If he had gone to Man City when they were looking for him, I think we'd have been raving about Fred now. What a great player in that City team, just a cog in that team. At Man United, he's probably asked to do more than he's capable of doing, and he stands out at times for the mistakes that he makes. But I think the mistakes that he makes are often good mistakes in the sense that he will try to make a forward pass, try to be ambitious with it, and not try to hide with a... You know, an easy sideways pass or a backwards pass. I just think Fred is a good player in a poor team, and I think sometimes those players can be exposed for looking worse than they actually are. I just think he's surrounded by players that aren't quite good enough.
We have to talk about Cristiano Ronaldo because it's news when he gets substituted. I thought it was interesting that he gets substituted by Harry Maguire, just as it's news that Harry Maguire doesn't start.
Yeah, because he was not fit to start. And
but
Rangnick said he wanted the back five not to make the same mistakes as he did, obviously.
Okay. I'm glad Rangnick had his reasons, no doubt. But what we saw on the bench, and this is optics, right? And this is what takes over the story. I have my own views on this. We saw a hugely animated Cristiano Ronaldo on the sidelines saying, you know, it sounded like he was saying, why me? You can go back five without taking me off. Blah, blah, blah. I think the score was 2-0 at the time, if memory serves. Augie, is this a thing with Cristiano where it's just because any other player being animated and unhappy on the sidelines isn't going to get the attention from the manager, isn't going to get the attention from the media? Or is there something to it? Are Cristiano and Rangnick not meshing?
Well, I mean, look, I mean, I remember being at a game 10, 12 years ago when Cristiano stormed off and did the same thing with Sir Alex Ferguson. It is in his nature if he doesn't like coming off, ever. But it, obviously, you're right, when he comes off in a game and he starts throwing his tracksuit top around, it doesn't look good and it's Ronaldo, so everything's exacerbated. But listen, what I'm hearing is that Cristiano is open-minded, shall we say, about Rangnick, and I don't think he's kind of decided one or the other yet. And I do think that, you know, Rangnick is making decisions that his predecessor wouldn't have done. He's making strong decisions, sometimes decisions that will upset people, and I don't think that's a bad thing. But with Ronaldo, if you make a decision that doesn't impress him, he will not hide his emotions. And I think that happened at Brentford. But you've got to say that Rangnick got it right. And he's not got everything right, but I think he got that one right. And I don't think it's a bad thing that United have got a manager, interim manager, that is now going in there, upsetting people, upsetting a few egos, saying things that other people wouldn't have said. Because, you know, that team, that squad's been in a comfort zone for far too long. It's been too easy, it's been too nice. And they're not used to being told what to do and being asked to do things they don't want to do by a coach. So maybe Rangnick's legacy at the end of this 6 months is that he's the guy that brought a lot of things to a head, so that the next manager that comes in has to do less of this and can get on with the job from day one.
I'm going to throw this out there. At 2-0, the game is still in the balance, because you're 2-0, you're away from home, there's a home crowd, Brentford do that weird stuff.
Yeah, we saw that against Aston Villa. Yeah. We're 2-0 up.
But they do the weird stuff with the long throw-in, with the set pieces. You know, there's bad karma from when Cristiano came off against Young Boys and you saw what happened there. It still takes big, big cojones to take off Cristiano Ronaldo when you're 2-0 up, especially when you're sending on Harry. No, but honestly, imagine this. Imagine it's 2-0 up. Rashford doesn't score the third goal. They get some weird throw-in bouncy goal. And then Maguire does something stupid. Maguire came on for Cristiano. And it's 2-2.
Yeah.
Do you think the knives would be out for Ralph?
Ronaldo didn't play the last two games. He had a knee goal or an injury, whatever. No, but what I mean is that Rangnick had a lot of reasons to take him off.
He did. He absolutely...
So regardless of what happened after...
He absolutely did, but he's still brave. Like, the reality is Rangnick has a contract as manager at the end of the season, right? He can either play it safe and he gets paid, or he can rock the... But I think this is what Mark was alluding to before. Or he can either say, you know what, I'm going to make footballing decisions. I don't care about egos.
I'm not sure this is a footballing decision. The only decision is go to a back five from a back four, which they didn't do at Villa, and it cost them 2 points. That's all. So you think, okay, we're going to bring a defender on. Who do we take off? Who cannot play 90 minutes in that team? Well, Cristiano, because he just got back from injury. We don't want to risk him. We've got another game in 3 days' time. Probably a tougher game against West Ham than this one against Brentford. Let's not be stupid here and silly and keep him for 90 or 95 minutes with the risk of him having a setback. I don't think that's bravery.
Okay, I thought it was brave, but Mark, am I being too kind to Rangnick? Is it just a normal footballing decision that any manager would have made?
It's a decision any good manager would have made, and I think I don't think.
Would the previous United manager have made it?
Well, he made it against Young Boys, as we know, and it backfired. Exactly. But I think generally, the previous manager would have avoided those big decisions that certain players were taken off, certain players were put on. You know, favouritism was alluded to. I think Rangnick has made some tough calls, and I think taking Ronaldo off is a tough call. I think because he knows what the reaction will be. He knows how Ronaldo will take it. And it just creates a lot of noise, doesn't it? And Ronaldo created a lot of noise last week with an interview that he gave, which addressed a few home truths. So, you know, Ronaldo will always be a lightning rod for this sort of thing, but I think Rangnick did the right thing against Brentford. You know, like Jules said, he hadn't played for two games. He's 37 next month.
Yeah, I think it's much braver to start Elanga and drop Sancho and Rashford.
Sancho was unavailable.
No, I know, but
supposedly.
Still, yeah, but even the game before, I think this is far braver than just taking Cristiano with 15 minutes to go or whatever it was, because he's just coming back from injury and you want to go to a back five, which, again, that cost you before.
We'll get to Lang in a minute. The Cristiano on the bench, the animated discussion, asking explanations during the game. Again, my take is, obviously no player's happy generally when they're substituted.
Yeah.
It's fine to ask for explanations. This is Cristiano's personality that, you know, he feels that he can ask it during the game. Every team he's been on has generally accepted it and not seen it as disruptive.
Yeah.
Rangnick didn't nerd out with his glasses and say, no, leave me alone, Cristiano. Like, I'm focusing on the game, right? that's fine. Yeah, this isn't going to have. This isn't a sign of anything. This is just in the moment.
Unless
or is there more?
Unless there's beef already between them two, which is possible. You know, there might be a world where Rangnick would rather not play Cristiano full stop at all than playing him because he doesn't really fit what he wants to do. You know,
well, I think it's obvious he doesn't fit what he wants to do. I mean, anybody who's followed his career knows that.
Okay, yeah. So this is the question to you and Ogi. If Rangnick could really decide what he wants, would Cristiano start in that team? Be honest.
Okay, I would say, I'll answer, then I'll throw it to you, Augie. I would say, yes, he would.
But you just said that it doesn't fit what he wants
to
do.
Hang on. He would, because United, even though they have a lot of money, have finite resources. If you went to Rangnick and say, hey, instead of the whatever it is, 45 million that we're paying him a season, plus the transfer fee, you can have that in players and amortization of your choice. You can have a whole gaggle of Nkunkus and Haidaras and sort of players that you like. Yeah. He'd say, oh, yeah, I'll take that.
Okay.
But so he was now that Cristiano's here, I think
has to play him.
No, I think
he wants to play him or he has to?
I think he wants to play him because of the players that they have generally. While he doesn't fit his scheme, I think he's accepted he has to be flexible enough. Because he looks at the other ones, and we'll get to Rashford in a minute. I don't, this isn't the Rashford that we expect. This isn't the Rashford.
Yeah,
Rashford's not playing to his wages. Sancho's not playing to his wages. Cavani is older. Martial, let's not even go there. So, of course he's going to play Cristiano.
It's right. Exactly that, Jules. It's right. I mean, it's the cards he's been dealt. He has to deal with what he's got. And I think, in an ideal world, if he could say at the start of the summer, I'll build a squad of players to play in these positions, he wouldn't have Ronaldo in that position and he wouldn't probably play him. But because of what he has, there's no point in me repeating what Gab said, but he's right about every single player in that category that he can't rely on any of his forwards for different reasons. So Ronaldo, he can rely on him more than he can rely on the others, but he can't rely on him 100%. But at least, he's got 8 goals in the Premier League this season. It's not a bad return. It's not great, but he's still delivering more than Cavani, Martial, Rashford, even Greenwood. So he has to play because he's the best of a bunch of bad options, really.
Jules, we touched upon Alanga before. Big call playing him in consecutive games. What I find interesting, and we talked about what he wants to do tactically. Obviously, we've seen them play effectively. It was a 4-2-3-1 last night. Certainly on television, that's what it looked right? 4-2-3-1. If Cristiano's playing, means Cristiano center forward. So we both said earlier, and I stick to this: Cristiano center forward is not a good idea. It doesn't help. You can't press. He gets kicked. He gets tired. He can't run into. He's much better, much more effective, either playing in a two or coming in from a wide position with a real center forward. Does it mean anything that he's willing to sacrifice that? You said it was a brave decision for Alanga to get Alanga on the pitch.
But you can see why. It's because he's got a lot of energy. I mean, to start with, I think he's typically the kind of player, not just because he's young, but typically the kind of player that would do anything Rangnick says. If Rangnick says, I want you to man mark the right back the whole game, I think Alanga would do that. He's a bright kid. But certainly is him and Greenwood being wide, and that's why I'm quite worried, I have to say, for Rashford and Sancho here, is because they've got so much energy and so much pace that they can easily become the second up front with Cristiano, one after the other. The goal that Elanga scores, I know it's a run from the left inside towards the centre, but it's exactly what he's done. He's like supporting Cristiano up front.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Greenwood can do exactly the same. So at the beginning, they're wide, and they stay wide when you need width in the pitch and the way United play, but one of them becomes Cristiano's partner up front.
You know what that movement was that he made? That movement where he comes in from the side and effectively becomes the other center forward.
Yeah.
It's the movement that Cristiano Ronaldo made so throughout his career when he was starting out wide.
But I don't think that Sancho and Rashford can do what Elanga and Greenwood did at Brentford in that second half, for example, in support of Cristiano. And the only way that maybe this formation can work with Cristiano is if you use them two on wide or slash up front.
Let's talk Rashford, because I want to get your view on what Jules just said, but also, obviously he's had injuries, and I think everybody likes Rashford because of the way he talks, because of his personality, because, of all the stuff he does off the pitch.
Yeah, of course.
Put that all to one side. But if Marcus Rashford were here, and he would tell you that he hasn't performed to his level or to his wages. I don't think there's any question about it.
Sure.
And he hasn't done it for a long time.
Problem is, Gab, there's been an industrial scale PR operation which in recent days, which tells you that Marcus Rashford hasn't performed, but it's everybody else's fault apart from his, because, you know, he's not been coached, the players aren't good enough, he's been playing with injuries and all this nonsense. I think Rashford needs
to take when people, right? Couldn't we say the PR operation?
You say that all the time.
What?
You say, you always explain that.
No.
His camp I actually wasn't briefing everyone. Oh, right. Sorry, I thought that's what you were saying.
On these briefings, right? When people say, well, Mark, you know, it's not Marcus's fault, the players around him aren't good enough. Are you tempted? Because what I would do is say, like, excuse me, PR man, which players around him aren't good enough? Is it Cristiano Ronaldo's not good enough? Is it Bruno Fernandes who's not good enough? Is it Mason Greenwood who's not good enough? No. Who are these players who are rubbish where Marcus Rashford has to carry the team and he's struggling to do that?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it focuses on the the lack of coaching. But I think...
The lack of coaching, what, from the previous manager, the guy everybody loved?
Yeah, but he wasn't a good coach, and neither are his coaches. But I think, let's just get back to the point of Rashford. I think that Rashford has underperformed for quite a long time now, both for club and for country. It's not just a United thing, for England as well. And I'm just a bit sick of hearing that there's so many mitigating factors. Well, sometimes you just have to, the player has to focus on himself and be better at what he does. And, you know, he's done a lot of great stuff off the pitch. I think that has kind of encroached on his game now, and I don't think he's spent enough time focusing on his football, because if he had, I don't think he'd be in this situation right now where his form is at a nosedive. And, you know, we saw his performance against Wolves last week. That was horrible to watch, both his performance and his reaction on the bench. He looked bereft. He looked shot to pieces. Now, I don't think, what's Rashford now, 24? I think that he's been in the team for 6 years now, and I don't think he's progressed as he should have done. If he'd have played for Pep Guardiola at Man City, I think we'd be seeing Marcus Rashford as a world beater right now. I think he'd have been coached to a different level. I think he'd have been a much better team player. I think the problem United have got is that Rashford and a few others, I think Mason Greenwood's in danger of becoming like this as well, are individual players that aren't team players. I don't quite know what Rashford offers anymore. And I think that getting back to the Elanga situation, I think Rangnick has done that for two reasons. First of all, to reward Elanga for his performances in training and in brief substitute appearances, but also to make a point to Rashford and to Sancho, this is what I need from my players. I want a work ethic, I want a desire, I want a commitment, I want you to chase lost causes, I want you to do what everything that Elanga does that you've stopped doing. Now, you know, Marcus Rashford, what we're in now, we're in January. I think that he's got a real struggle in his hands to make the World Cup squad this year, and people might be surprised at that because it's Marcus Rashford and, you know, he always gets in the squad. Gareth Southgate has made a point throughout his England career of not picking players that don't play for the clubs, or not picking players who stop performing. Marcus Rashford is in both those categories right now. Yes, he scored last night, he came, and that might be the start of things. Who knows? It might be the kickstart is return to form again, but I don't know if it will be. But this is a massive year for Marcus Rashford, for the club, for country, and also his contract expires at the end of next season. Now, United have got another option on that, a year's option, so it will take him to 2024. But if you're Man United, do you just blindly give Marcus Rashford a new contract because it's Marcus Rashford, or you think, actually, we need this guy to show us that he can deliver more than he is doing, because why should we just give him a big new contract on the basis of the last 18 months, 2 years?
Rashford, the last five seasons, has played 50-plus games a season, which I think is crazy.
Well, that's what I was going to ask.
And for me, I know he didn't start the season because of the shoulder injury and everything, but I think there was a burnout there, even in the pipeline before. And I do think that having a break, which in a way was a good thing with the injury and the surgery and all of that, but to come back to full fitness after your body took so long of a break, after the battering that you gave it for five seasons in a row where you played far too many games for such a young player, I think that's why maybe there's still a lot of work to be done there for him to be fully fit. He doesn't look fully fit to me. He doesn't look like he can play 90 minutes at high intensity, for example.
We've seen this happen and if you go back, and this is a fun exercise you can do on Wikipedia, pick 10 of the greatest players who you think are the 10 greatest players in the world right now, and I think you'll find many of them had a serious dip after three, four, five years in the first team. Now, obviously, he came along very early. He played a ton of games. There are a lot of reasons for it. I think it is something, as Mark said, that needs to be addressed. And I think if I'm United, again, Mark makes a great point with this contract. The reality is, the PR blow to losing Rashford, even if not good Rashford, right? If Rashford becomes another one of those guys who, you know, it comes through the system at United, is good for a while, and then moves on, and then does something somewhere else, that would really be a hammer blow. So I think one of the priorities, obviously after the new manager, one of the priorities is to let's figure this guy out. Let's figure out you know, what we want to do, because we have to make a call. We're going to have to make a call pretty soon about this. By the way, did you notice? I think Mark has a weak spot for one Pep Guardiola, because that's the second time you said, if this player had Pep Guardiola as his coach, second time. I don't disagree. Mark, you're 100% right. I agree with you 100%. I want to ask about Paul Pogba, because he's returning to training, close to return to training. He's still a free agent in the summer.
He is.
I've been told by the Pogba end that Rangnick really, really likes him and really, really rates him. Is he going to...
Who are these people, Gab? Who are these people? Who are these people that are telling you these things?
People who are...
I heard the same thing from the same camp, so...
No, I think... My people who are paid by Pogba's agent to speak to journalists. How's that? Pogba could just be making it up. I don't know, right?
No, but it's true. It's true that I think he's desperate for Pogba to be able to come back. And even what he said yesterday, Rangnick, about how amazing Pogba was at training, just in the two sessions that he played.
Okay, so when Pogba comes back, right? Let's play the United formation game, right? Because we said we've had the 4-2-2-2. And obviously Pogba there fits in front of the back four, but really nowhere else, I think. Unless you want to put him alongside Bruno Fernandes behind two strikers, but that wouldn't make any sense. Would be a difficult transition. But if we go 4-2-3-1, it's even more problematic, because we've seen Pogba in the two, at least under the previous manager, didn't work. Pogba on the wing means no Alanga, and also doesn't really... It felt like that was something Solskjaer did just to shoehorn him in.
Yeah.
So, where does Pogba fit?
In the two.
What do we think he's going to do?
It's going to drop either McTominay or Fred.
And he's just going to have a better manager, so it's going to work, than the one he had before, so it's going to work.
Yeah, 100%. He's played in the two before, with France.
That was with another bad manager, so that's perfect.
He's had good games at United in the two as well, in the double pivot.
Okay with that, Mark? Or are you going to be one of those guys, Pogba gives the ball away too many times, he doesn't work hard enough?
I'm not okay with it. I just think it's a case of just getting Pogba in the team for the sake of it. That's not his best position. I don't think he's a player that is... He's good in that position. I think he's better further forward. But I think because United have got so many square pegs in round holes, that it's where they have to play him. I think if you could play him alongside a younger Nemanja Matic, it would have been the perfect situation, because Matic can read the game much better than Fred and McTominay. I think if you play Pogba with McTominay or Fred, that's where the problems start, because neither of those players, I think, have got the quality or experience to play with Pogba and to do the stuff that Pogba can't do. I think Matic can. But... I don't know. I think that it just complicates things further when Pogba comes back, because I thought at the weekend Bruno Fernandes had his best game for a long time, and there's no Ronaldo in the way. But if Ronaldo comes back and Bruno gets, squeezed out, and if Pogba comes in, then Bruno's performances get squeezed out again. I just think United have got a lot of players, good players, but they just don't fit in the team that any sort of formation that Rangnick can come up with.
I was hoping for some positivity from Mark after a big away win, but no, due to form. Okay.
Just realism.
I want to get your take on this. This is something we've discussed before, Mark, before we let you go. It's been suggested, it's been reported, I've been told this, I have no idea, that Richard Arnold, another one of those people with two first names, which is always a bit suspicious, like Mark Ogden.
Is Ogden a first name?
No.
Yes. Ogden Nash?
Who's Ogden Nash?
There are. Ogden is a first name, right?
Like where? In what country? In the U.S. Who's called Ogden? Give me.
I told you, Ogden Nash.
You made that up. Who's Ogden Nash?
Stop it. All right, fine. But I've been told that Richard Arnold has looked at Ed Woodward's experience at the club and isn't going to make some of the same mistakes in terms of being so visible, in terms of the guy who was perceived by everybody as making all the bad decisions that didn't work out.
So involved in football.
On the football side, right? He knows his limits. I've also been told by somebody else, I have no idea if this is true, that actually a lot of the bad decisions that Woodward made were actually Joel Glazer decisions, but Joel Glazer likes to keep a low profile. And so Woodward's happy to take credit to protect his boss, right? That's what I was told.
That's kind.
And I think with Arnold, that he doesn't want that to happen, so he might hire some sort of figure or promote a figure internally and just give them wide latitude to say, hey, you and Joel make the decisions, okay?
On top of Murta and Fletcher and all of that.
Either somebody on top, or just elevate one of these no-name drones who never appear in public, never put their face in front of anything, right? Have you heard this, Mark? Well, what's your take on this? Is this something that's possible? Is this something that's being talked about?
Yeah, I mean, Richard Allen's a different character, Ed Woodward. I mean, I've got to know both of them over the years, and I think they are very different. Ed Woodward is a guy that likes to be liked, he's very sociable, will wave you over for a drink if you're on a trip somewhere. Richard Arnold's the opposite. He's personal, but he won't ask you to hang around. He'll kind of usher you away. So he's a different character. I think he's more demanding in his current role at the club. I think he's more unpopular than popular, but in the sense that he demands a lot of his staff. So I think he won't have the same determination or desperation to be liked as Ed Woodward has been. So I think that will have an impact on the decisions that he makes. He won't do things for populism or to be popular. I think he'll do it because he thinks it's the right thing. So, and in terms of having somebody between him and the football side as a buffer, I think that may be Rangnick's role. That could be this kind of consultancy role that he's been lined up for. I think
once
that,
he stops being manager, you mean?
Yeah, I think that's something that would fit well, and it would enable Richard Arnold to come away from the football side of things. He's not a football guy. He's a rugby guy. He's right. A guy that admits that he's not a football guy. So it might streamline things, but ultimately, as you say, Joel Glazer is the guy that signs off all the big decisions, and I think that's probably right. I think some of the bad decisions have been his fault. I think we do know that Joel Glazer pretty much said no to letting go of Anthony Martial a couple of years ago when Jose Mourinho wanted him to go because he was Joe Glazer's favourite player. And
so I understand this completely,
While we have you about the football intelligentsia at Old Trafford, and then I want to hit Brentford because obviously we totally overlooked them for obvious reasons. You wrote a story earlier this week about Donny van de Beek, and you sort of took us through all the hemming and hawing at United. You mentioned a United source who said that Donny van de Beek doesn't offer you much more than what Lingard does. Mm-hmm. He does the same things. And I actually went on StatsBomb.
That's not true.
I got the data. And certainly, if you look at it from an analytics standpoint, if you look at it from where they played before joining United, they're very different players. You can say maybe van de Beek is better or worse than Lingard, but you can't say that they offer the same things because they have different skill sets. Who are these people? I'm not going to expect you to name names, but are you surprised when you hear something like that? I mean, is that a little bit like saying,
isn't that part of the problem then? If people at the club believe that Van der Beek is the same as Lingard, then I think this is a lost cause.
It's like saying, why should we sign Archer? He's the same as Cavani.
Look, I'm not surprised because ultimately he was signed. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer didn't want Donny van de Beek, so it was a decision made by the football committee or whatever you want to call them. So they'd be given this player that they weren't particularly wanting, and I think it was more of a dismissive thing that he doesn't give us any more than Jesse Lingard in the sense that he can play, in the attacking positions, he can float between the lines, he can score the odd goal, but doesn't really do anything that takes us to the next level. So that, rather than a kind of technical basis, it was just what they felt he gave to the team. It was like, well, why have you given us Donny van de Beek? He's just the same as Jesse Lingard in terms of, what he does. That's what the view was. So it was a dismissive kind of reaction to a player that he didn't particularly want. You're right. It's not Jesse Lingard. But I can see the point. I can see this. That they're trying to improve the squad with players that are on a par with what they've already got.
I think Donny van de Beek, if you put him in the right conditions and you have a plan for him, he'll give you much more than Lingard. And he'll give you different things from Lingard. But that's by the by. A word on Brentford, again, for those, we all know the story about they come up, they got all the Danish guys, they do things differently. They have, let's face it, a bunch of no-names because, other than Pontus Janssen is probably, and Christian Norgaard are probably their most famous players, right?
We mean worldwide?
Globally. Like, yes, if you had to, United have that guy who's American, who went to Brown, which is, of course, not a university, but just a color, who, ranks people, who's, the social media expert.
Yeah.
In terms of global appeal, their biggest global appeal is...
Probably,
it's Janssen, maybe a bit of Ivan Toney.
Yeah.
But they go out there, they work super, super hard, they do things differently. Why do they create so many problems for the opposition? Why are they doing so well?
I do think the intensity is a big part of it.
But how do you... I mean, But every manager says, oh, we want to play intense,
no,
right?
You have to. Yeah, yeah, no, I know.
But how did they manage to do it?
Well, but one, they have players who can take that, one, the work weight, and then doing it in the game and having that collective strength. You know, you put the intensity all together. There's no point having two running and the other nine not running.
It's the tactical cohesion, I think. I
yeah,
agree with
of
you.
Course,
it's
completely.
Because they maximize, they're very efficient in the
and
way
everything.
They do that.
You look at the structure and the distances between players, again, yesterday, especially in the first half, and it's great. It's great coaching. I mean, you know, Frank can look a bit
weird.
No, weird.
Popped up.
A bit different.
Tweaking.
Yeah. He's always full of energy himself, which is normal. I mean, what they do on throw-ins, especially, and I know a lot of people don't really believe in throw-in coaches and all of that. We've had, you know, me and Stevie Nicol have had the argument many times. But if you look at the numbers in terms of expected goals and shot following throw-ins, they so much better than anybody else. I mean, they're better than the whole rest of 19 teams combined from the league. So they've got different assets to other people. And I think sometimes it works. Sometimes it works
not
for a
so
bit
much.
And
yeah.
Not so much, because Thomas Frank can say what he wants. You have to take your chances, whoever you are, Brentford, United, yeah. Chelsea, City.
Augie, so I'll just leave you with this question just to put you in a tough spot. Now that you've seen half a season of Brentford in the Premier League against Premier League opposition and half a season of Thomas Frank, if Thomas Frank had been the Manchester United manager all season
what?
Long, would they be in the top four right now?
Don't answer, Augie, don't answer.
It depends on the standards that the players set for themselves in terms of coaching and whether they've heard of him or whether they think he's good enough. So you have to kind of contemplate the dressing that he's walking into. But probably not, no. I don't think so. I think United squad is too dysfunctional for Thomas Frank to have got into the top four.
Yeah, not very well put together, I think, as it's pretty obvious to all.
Good answer.
Thanks so much, Augie. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough United. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Jules, we love our comebacks.
Oh,
Tottenham,
yes.
2-1 down away to Leicester in the final minute of injury time. Go on to win 3-2. Magical Steven Bergvine.
Yes.
Is it just randomness, poor defending, or some magical Conte mentality? Because this was the opposite of Spursy.
Yeah, yeah. And to be fair, they deserve to win. They were the better side. I think the expected goals is like 5 or something crazy like that. And for a long time, they only had scored 1. They missed a lot of chances. I thought they were much better than Leicester, who scored 2 goals with deflected shots. And in the end, even if it's a miracle, it looks like a miracle because he scored 2 goals in the space of 60 seconds by Bergwijn. The third one, his second one especially, big mistake by Tielemans on kickoff. Don't go and lose the ball.
I think Tielemans thought the game was over. That's the only thing. Because you know I love Tielemans.
Yeah, me too.
And the way he's running back at the goal like this, I think he's like, why are we still playing?
I know. Great pass by Kane. Great finish, even better by Bergwijn. And Conte still unbeaten in the league since taking over. Gab, speaking of wild endings, this was back on Monday night. But those scenes when Milan played Spezia were straight from the Twilight Zone.
Yeah. So Milan had a chance to go top, although they would have played one more game than Inter. And it's mad because they dominated Spezia. Spezia goalkeeper Provedel made a whole bunch of saves. Actually played really, really well.
Yeah.
And it's 1-1, and there's a foul on Rebic. This is in injury time. The ball comes to Macias, who scores. However, referee blows for the foul, does not give the
advantage. So it's 1-1 at the time. It's 1-1
at the time, yeah. And that is a big, big mistake. I mean, that's a massive mistake because the rules are very, very clear on this.
Yeah.
And they're so rattled by it that then They go up the other in the pitch, and Jazzy scores for Spezia, yeah. And they lose 2-1. But the most amazing thing about this was what happened after the game, because I can imagine other clubs that I'm not going, and other club officials that I'm not going to name, say Pavel Nedved. If this happened to them, you know, they'd be camping out in the referee's dressing room and blah blah blah. Or Napoli too. Milan, you saw the Milan players go and consult. The referee was so upset at the mistake he made.
He apologized, didn't he?
He apologized. Yeah. The referee said, apologize. But the players on the pitch, Ibrahimovic taking him to him and saying, like, it's okay, we all make mistakes and so on. Talk about a PR win quite touching. Bundesliga may be business as usual, but the German Cup certainly isn't. Bayern were knocked out in the last round. Ooh. And now it's Borussia Dortmund who are eliminated, losing to perpetual hipster favorites St. Pauli.
Who are top of the Bundesliga Zwei, by the way. So they're doing really well. It's not like if they were beaten them with a rubbish team. They were very good, and it was a full strength Dortmund team. Again, it's not if Marco Rose played the kids or the reserve team, and they were well beaten as well. I mean, this, as we keep saying, but there's something deeply wrong by the way they defend, especially, and maybe even the fact that they took this game a bit lightly, maybe, I don't know, but that's embarrassing. They're not the only one, because Gladbach lost also to a second division team, not as well placed in the division than St. Pauli, Hanover. But so it was a weekend, it was midweek of surprises
feel,
in the...
it did the feel like they're like, oh, St. Pauli, you know, a bunch of weirdo commune hippies with their stupid like pirate logo, we got this. And no, St. Pauli showed them, well done.
Exactly. We keep asking ourselves, Gab, if La Liga... title race is still open. Well, Sevilla could only draw their game in hand away to Valencia, so they're 4 points back. Real Madrid, do you think they still have a chance?
I'm going to say I think they do, because of the way they played. They played really well in this game. They hit the woodwork. Tecatito Corona was phenomenal
new
on the
signing,
break.
Yeah.
Valencia was, I think, fortunate to come away with a draw. Gonzalo Guedes scoring a great goal. No, there's no Julian Lopetegui, he's in COVID situation. But no, I think this is something where you say, you know what, we're still in this. 4 points, it's a head-to-head.
I think that was their chance, I really do.
Senegal were heavy favorites to win the African Cup of Nations, and I guess they still are, maybe, but not based on the way they're playing. And should they consider themselves a bit fortunate, because they played Malawi, finished 0-0, and that's only because there was a penalty given to Malawi that was overturned.
It was overturned. They were lucky. They've scored
correct
one
decision?
Goal. Not sure. They had scored one goal in the three group stages games, which was in the 97th minute of the first game, a penalty by Sadio Mane. That's all. I think they've been very poor at times in terms of creativity, and you know, maybe the 4-3-3 formation, or maybe they have to change something if they want to go far and win this tournament. At least you'd had Mendy and Koulibaly coming back. They had COVID. They missed the first two games. So it's a stronger team.
The way Koulibaly played, I mean, he might have stayed away.
But what do you expect, you know? So hopefully for them, it will get better. But certainly, I think they got very away with one there. The Comoros Island, with a population of just over 1 million people, Gab, somehow heavily favoured Ghana, with the likes of Thomas Partey, Amati and the Ayew brothers. This was hugely disappointing for the Black Stars, who are out now of the competition, despite coming back from 2-0 down to 2-2. And Andre Ayew's red card after 25 minutes, that was harsh too. It was just a shocker from Ghana.
Yeah, it was a shocker. Look, I'll deal with the red card first, right? I watched it on English television, so obviously you've got the old ex-pro. Well, he's entitled to go for the ball. Like, you know, it's a through ball. He stretches for it. The keeper's coming out. Yeah. Red may be harsh, but you are putting your keeper in great danger, because your boot is going straight for the head. Right?
I know. So this whole off.
Yeah, this whole like entitled to go for the ball, like, oh yeah, like I'm entitled to decapitate you because I'm going for the ball. I mean, what kind of nonsense is that? That obviously derailed them. I thought they showed a lot of character because they gave up the goal early. They're 2-0 down. Mm. They come back to 2-2, and then it just falls apart defensively 5 minutes from time. It's tremendous. Comoros Islands, a million
story.
People. Look, we all went nuts when the Iceland at the Euros and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And obviously Iceland has a lower population than Comoros Islands. Yeah, you've got less people, but you certainly have much more in terms of gyms and money and facilities and indoor facilities.
Completely.
And so on. So this is a tremendous achievement from them. All right, I suspect it's time for some more quick hits. Yes. Good news and bad news for Paris Saint-Germain. The bad news is that Kylian Mbappe has picked up an injury. Yeah. The good news is that those rumors that he's reportedly taking this extension we talked about seriously continue to persist.
This is good, yeah. So he didn't train the last 2 days. We don't know if he will be able to play against Reims on Sunday night.
It's okay, that Messi fella's back.
Yeah, right? Messi is back, so it's okay. You know, you can Kylian can take a rest. And for the extension, it's just that PSG are quite positive after the positive meetings that they had, and that is quite receptive to the idea of signing a short extension to stay just one more year at the club. I think this is the idea. Let's see, there's still a long way to go. He can well sign for Real Madrid or whoever he wants, but there's a feeling that those talks are positive, so we'll have to see.
Tell you what, only way I do this is if you work out a deal where I sign for Real Madrid and they loan me back for
a year. That's never going to happen.
Whatever, but that's still, I think I don't see the benefit to him in doing it.
Chelsea ahead 1-1 away to Brighton on Tuesday night. Thomas Tuchel said they're tired. Gavi's players are tired. Hakim Ziyech scores but doesn't celebrate and has that stare, a bit like the Dybala stare towards the bench. Gavi, they're not officially out of the title race, right?
I think so. Yes, I think there's far too many points dropped. People will mock Tuchel saying that they're tired. Look, in the end, if you're tired, you're tired. I think it's obvious physically they're not where they are. You can say, well, they shouldn't be tired because they have so many players and they can rotate and blah, blah, blah. Fine. Whatever. But they are. Yeah. And they're showing on the pitch, whatever the reasons are.
They've played 15 games and Brighton 9 games in the same amount of time.
They've played a ton of games. Brighton are a really good side. I think Brighton even gotten more out of this game than they did. I think Tuchel has some big decisions to make because obviously they've got the World Cup coming up, they've got the Champions League. You know, you're not going to write off the season, but I think you have to figure out, okay, what kind of team do I want to be? Because I think thinking in terms of knockout competitions is very different than thinking in terms of league situations. Xavi has given Ousmane Dembélé an ultimatum over his contract. If he wants to stay, he needs to sign now. Yeah. Jules, is this going to work?
Well, Barcelona have now announced that he's not staying and he's not signing the offer on the table, so he has
They don't get to decide. Well, he's not staying in the summer, maybe, but he's staying
but
now.
What they want, him to go now. That's what they want. They want him to go now. Either they pay him off and he goes on a free, or they sell him now to whoever. But for Dembélé, this is not in his interest to go now.
Yeah, if you're Dembélé's agent, what you do is go
exactly. You want to wait until the end of your contract, and then you're free to sign wherever you want with a huge commission, huge signing on fee, huge wages, everything you want. So I don't know how that is going to develop. But one, they don't have many days left in this transfer window, and two, imagine he's still there on the 1st of February. What, you bench him the whole season, or you send him with a reserve for the remaining of the season? It's a crazy situation. Dembélé's agent saying that Barca put them under pressure. Barca didn't play that well. Barca saying that they played it well is Dembélé and his agent, who are out of order. Carlo Ancelotti says Gareth Bale is available again. What, was he not available before?
Apparently he was injured for 5 months.
In fact, we could even see him in a few hours on Thursday night against Elche in the Copa del Rey. God, this is good news, right?
I mean, I guess. The man's contract is out. Everybody goes out of contract in the summer. If you need an extra body, sure. But I think if you're Real Madrid, your priority, if there is one dysfunctional, highly paid, 100 million pound winger that you're going to work on, it's Eden Hazard. It's not Gareth Bale, because you might be able to sell Eden Hazard one day. He might come back to be the player you thought he was going to be. Gareth Bale doesn't matter because he's leaving. Mm. So I don't see how this is relevant to anything.
Completely.
The Premier League will reconsider their protocols for postponing matches after a number of people, including Antonio Conte, who called them a mess, and Villa's Christian Perslow, who said they're not fit for purpose, and both implying that it was being abused by our friend in North London, possibly. Does this make sense to you that they revised this?
What do you mean reconsider? Did they have a protocol before?
They did it. They had guidelines.
That's BS. There was no protocol before. It was ridiculous. That's why they made the best league in the world look a shambles, being an absolute mess. Conte is right, Perslow is right, everybody is right here. They messed that up completely, the Premier League, and they're the only one to blame. No other clubs, no players, no managers, nothing. They have themselves to blame for this mess. And now, cut me the slack of that. Yeah, we were going to reconsider the protocol. There was nothing in place before. Listen, it was ridiculous.
I actually, on this one, I'm with Conte on this. You just do it based on COVID cases.
Exactly.
People who have COVID and people who have to self-isolate, these are exceptional circumstances, fine. If you have more than a certain number, game gets postponed. Because that's something that's measurable. Not like, so-and-so is a stub toe, so-and-so is a bit of a cold. And this just fuels rumors. It's crazy. Burnley have like six games in hand, something stupid like that? It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. An Arsenal player is being investigated following claims that there were unusual betting patterns, Gab, of a yellow card that was awarded in a game this season. What was this all about?
Okay, so for those who don't know, you can bet on many things. These are called spot bets, when you bet on things like the time of the first throw-in, or you bet on is so-and-so is going to pick up a yellow card in this minute. These are very small markets, and not many people bet on them. But so when all of a sudden a lot of people pile on with bets, that's what you call a suspicious betting pattern. And there are people who go and look at this. We've seen it happen in lower divisions before. Matt Letizia wrote about it in his book that once he wanted to make some extra money by being responsible, I think it was for the first throw-in or something. So he just booted the ball. He tried to boot the ball out of play from kickoff. But one of his teammates kept it in. This is bad. This is weird. This is, if proven, this is very concerning. Really why strange. An Arsenal player should do this to make up a few extra bob. Let's hope that there's an innocent explanation.
Yeah.
On Monday, Robert Lewandowski scored his 300th goal for Bayern Munich, and we wondered whether he had a shot at breaking Gerd Müller's record of 365. His contract expires in June of 2023, and according to Bild, there are two outcomes. He either gets sold this summer.
Yeah.
So they can get some money back. Or he gets a 2-year extension, but he has to take a pay cut. Jules, this is gratitude. I love it. They're making business decisions. Part of me says, yeah, well done, Bayern. Part of me says, man, you guys really are pretty cruel and cold-hearted. It's
potentially their greatest player ever, or certainly in the top three.
One of them, yeah.
Well, that's not really what you would expect if you're Lewandowski, and even less if you're Pini Zahavi, his agent. I don't know where this is going to go. I would find it really weird that they said to him, you know what, get out. Get out here in the summer. They said, you don't want to extend? Get out. Get out. We sell you to, I don't know, Real Madrid, Man United, PSG, whoever. I don't know. I find that baffling. I would want him to stay and beat that record. I think it would be incredible. But
how awesome would it be if he stays in the Bundesliga and beats the record for Bayern, for Borussia Dortmund?
Oh
goes
God,
back to the source. Goes back to the
source. Oh, my God. Those are homers.
Well, but it almost feels like kind of cruel. You're saying you can't beat the record if you know, we've written linked to United or whatever. But
did you see his video about when he's trying to do a ponytail to his daughter? I mean, you've got girls, I've got a girl. He put the hair in the Hoover.
I've tried it. Doesn't work.
Juventus beat up Sampdoria to advance in the Coppa d'Italia, and Paulo Dybala scores again, Gab, and this time he celebrates. Does that mean anything?
I have no idea. I don't know what's going on in that boy's head. Maybe it means that, you know, after breaking off negotiations and so on and sulking, his agent went around, shopped him around Europe and said, hey, guess what? Nobody's going to pay you the money you want, so let's smile at the nice Mr. Rivabene and stick
again.
Around here and take the offer that's on the table while it's on the table.
Yeah.
Heavyweight clash in the Copa del Rey, and it ends with Real Sociedad knocking out Atletico Madrid 2-0 as Adnan Yazunay and the only living Sorloth in captivity get the goals after a bad mistake by Felipe. Just not good for the Contreras.
Not good at all. Remember the four defeats in a row they had in La Liga? It was pretty much similar kind of performance level where they had one shot on target the whole game. Yeah, they missed a couple of decent chances, but they were beaten by a better side with more energy, with more structure, better organized. Don't know, it was still a very strong Atletico side, certainly on paper, the one that started the game, but there's clearly something not right at the moment there. Inter make a bunch of changes against Empoli in the Coppa d'Italia and nearly get knocked out. But they win 3-2 in extra time thanks to two unlikely goal scorers, Andrea Ranocchia first and Stefano Sensi.
Okay, you said goal scorers, which is technically accurate. The script says heroes.
Yes, heroes.
I'm not sure
beating Empoli in extra time makes you a hero in the Coppa d'Italia last 16 rounds. That's what I'm saying.
Listen, Andrea Ranocchia, the most derided man and he's the ultimate cult hero, right? His last name literally means froggy. What does he do? In injury time with his team 2-1 down, all 6'5" of him, amassing this massive spidery frame, rising up into the heavens.
I see it, I picture it.
And he delivers this incredible half volley into the goal to make it 2-2. People joke about Ranocchia and he went to Hull.
He's not very good.
He's 33 years old. He never became the players. But what I find remarkable is You know, he played attacking midfield until he was like 17 years old.
That, it can't be possible.
He did.
How can he so bad?
Biggest attacking midfielder. He's got really good technique. He's just not.
Okay, let's move on. Well done to
Inter. Oh, and also Stefano Sensi,
by the way. That's the story that I'm here for. The guy was amazing. Then had all those injuries.
And all those tattoos. And then he.
Let's hope he comes back.
He's supposed to go on loan to Sampdoria. Now, I don't know. Now people are talking, oh, well, if Sensi's fit, he could be useful in the playoffs for Italy against Portugal as well. I'm assuming they get to Portugal, which you got to get there first.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Maybe it is a turnaround. Egypt beat Sudan 1-0 to advance the knockout phase. Jules, this is another very minimalist performance.
Very, very minimalist performance. They'd be happy with that, of course. But it wasn't great. Again, collectively, they're solid. We knew that. Scored on the set piece, but... And the rest.
You said they're all bad other than Mohamed Salah. But like, I look at it, these are players who play for big European sides. The ones who play in Egypt, the Egyptian league's very competitive.
Of course, they do.
Why do they look so bad?
They don't. I just think they're a team that is very good defending and being physically solid, and that's it. They don't have much flair, much creativity, apart from Salah himself. You know, that's the problem.
I was thinking just about Salah, like, the football that Klopp plays with the energy and the intensity in the pressing is basically the complete opposite of what he does of the football that he plays.
And I think there might be they're very, very dependent on him anyway. And I think maybe it's like when you play with Messi, and you tend to almost give him the ball and expect him to do something magical every single time. It doesn't happen like this. Meanwhile, Nigeria defeat Guinea-Bissau 2-0 to top their group. Gab, they're going to be the only team with 3 wins from their 3 group stages matches. They're surpassing all expectations considering, you know, the whole context and situation and players are injured. Are they now the favourite for you?
If not the favourites, are close to it. I think it's fantastic. I love my Super Eagles.
Yeah, you do.
I never thought... You know, obviously they made the change of manager. Maybe it's some Gernot Rohr post effect. No Emmanuel Dennis, no Victor Osimhen. Obviously they're out. Mm-hmm. I don't think people had them among the top 4 or 5. But they're scoring goals.
They're sharp. They're good.
They're sharp. Yeah. They're confident. You wouldn't want to be playing them.
No.
Duncan Ferguson has been named caretaker manager at Everton, which is not a surprise.
Nope.
But Jules, are you surprised by the 4 guys they're reportedly interviewing? Wayne Rooney, Frank Lampard Jr., Roberto Martinez, and Niko Kovac.
What would I be surprised? I mean, they all, in a way, Rooney, he's doing a really good job at Derby.
He's a job. A club that could cease to exist in a few days, but hopefully they won't. But
Frank Lampard, you might believe in the mould of the young manager who's done okay before and who you think can offer you like a long-term project. Roberto Martinez, you know, was there before you got rid. Why would you bring him back? Why would he want to come back? I'm not so convinced by that one. Niko Kovac did some really good things at Monaco, even before that, Bayern, before getting sacked. What about our friend Paulo Fonseca? I think he would be a really great shout there. There's other names as well. I've got no issues with any of the 4. It's just none of those 4 really inspire me that much. That's all.
You know what I would do? Look, I know that now they're freaking out that they're going to get relegated. I think they should have been interviewing directors of football from the moment that Brands left.
Yeah.
That was 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago?
Yeah.
Shall I give them the benefit of the doubt that that's what they have been doing and they've got a short list? Get that done first.
Exactly.
Get the director of football first and then figure out, assess the players you have, because I think you still have that leeway. You know, it may seem scary to be down there, but the gap between them and the teams at the bottom is still,
of course,
I think it's 6 points from the relegation zone. You're okay, unless Duncan Ferguson, you know you're going to ground out some results. Do that. Get it right this time.
I know. Jesse Lingard becomes a free agent in June. Of course, his contract expires, and he's reportedly turned down a loan move to Newcastle, at least for now. Are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised. Why would he go on loan in the last 6 months of his contract?
Crazy.
I mean, no. If you're Lingard, what you do is you say to Newcastle, hey, if you want me, then, you know, take me on loan, but then also already give me a contract for the 2 years after that, or 3 years, or however long after that.
He's not going to play in the championship.
Well, okay, but why go there for 6 months if they're going to get relegated, right? At least you have the security.
Yeah, but at least you play, and then you're free to decide where you want to go.
I don't know. I mean, supposedly, United want a fee for him.
Yeah.
Which, again, 6 months. Come on, man.
They want loan fees. Same with Martial. They're obsessed with loan fees.
But I guess they got to make some money back somehow. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is back at Arsenal. What's not clear is if he will stay there. Less clear is if he'll ever play again for Arsenal.
Yeah.
Jules, he has fitness issues. He has Arteta issues. Yeah. And reportedly, Al Nassr in Saudi Arabia have made a big offer.
Yeah. I don't know if you fancy going to Saudi Arabia. There's a couple of clubs there I think were interested. First on loan and then with an option... monetary option to buy him for 8 or 10 million euros, which could be of interest, I think, for Arsenal. And also, you obviously get rid of his wages. I don't think there's much of a future for him. He knows that without it, I think their whole relationship there has broken down, or certainly it seems like it.
All right, well, help me out with this, right? And you know my feelings on Aubameyang, and the enormous contract he gave, so I'm not going to go and gloat about that, even though those Arsenal fans said I was mad when I questioned it, right?
Yeah.
Why doesn't his agent just go to the club and say, hey, let me go on loan to another club in the Premier League. They'll pay me what they can pay me, 2 million, 3 million, or whatever. You guys pay the rest. At least you'll make some savings. Yeah. I'll be in a shop window in a league where people can actually afford to sign me if I do well. I'll make the same amount of money, and I'll get the play. Well, why doesn't he do that?
Maybe there's no Premier League clubs ready to do that.
You don't think he would walk
for
into
32 years old? I don't know.
But it's just a loan to the end of the season to help somebody.
I know, but like
maybe you don't think he could help Norwich or Newcastle?
But who says that he wants to go to Norwich or Newcastle?
Maybe for 6 months, as opposed to what? Sitting on his backside and not getting paid?
No, maybe there's other options like you know.
Like Al Nassr. Okay, yeah, fine.
But maybe that's what maybe that's what he wants.
Maybe he wants to move to Al Nassr. Okay, yeah. Maybe it's that.
I don't know. I think it'd be very interesting. But you're right. He might still be there on February the 1st, and I don't know what happens then.
From Arsenal's perspective, that's just the part I don't understand. You know, if you're not going to play him, get as much of his wages off your books, but put him in a shop window where maybe he'll have a year left. Maybe you can get something back in the summer. No, maybe he won't be. Maybe you can get something just to take him in the summer so you don't have to pay him next year, too.
No, I'm with you. Meanwhile, Gab, Aubameyang's Gabon teammates draw 2-2 with Morocco, which means that both teams advance to the last.
He's on the fence a little bit. I mean, the draw obviously suits both, but Hakimi's free kick. Oh, wow. Bit special, huh?
Yeah.
Betis beat up Alaves 4-0 to stay third. Jules, Manuel Pellegrini is well on track for Champions League place. They've played one more game, but it's a 4-point lead over Atletico and Real Sociedad and 5-point lead over Barcelona. They're going to stay in the top four, aren't they?
God, they look so good. They played so well. Juanmi, Fekir, who's been amazing. I mean, if you haven't seen
the ex-wunderkind Canales?
And Canales, of course, coming back from so many problems, fitness issues and all of that, to be a key player now in a team that plays so nice football. And if you haven't watched the game, there's a volley from Fekir that ends up being on a crossbar, but he was offside anyway. But it would have broken the internet and football if that had gone in. So well done to Fekir as well, and Pellegrini to bring him back to maybe the best football he's ever played.
That Fekir volley, not as good as Andrea Ranocchia. Let's make it very clear.
Much better, trust me. Brentford have offered Christian Eriksen a 6-month contract, but Gab, he's taking his time and weighing up his offers, which makes sense.
I think it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I think we also had, obviously Newcastle, because they get linked to everybody. Yeah. Leicester.
Yeah.
It appears that he's not going to go back to Spurs and be reunited with Conte, which I think is probably a good idea. The more I was thinking about it, Brentford in some ways doesn't make sense, right? Because they're all about intensity.
Yeah.
He's all about quality. Yeah. So unless they bring him in just to deliver on their set pieces, which he'd be very good at.
Yeah.
I don't quite know it makes sense. I think he would like the idea of coming back to London because he lived here for a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
He settled. I think he'd like it if another London club perhaps stepped forward. Maybe one which is all the way east, despite having West in their name, possibly.
What? They have too many, like Buendia, Lanzini, Bowen, like how many? Benrahma? How many number 10s do you want in that team?
Buendia's at Aston Villa, which is a little bit further north.
Sorry.
But yeah, I'm just kidding.
How many Fornals I was thinking? I said Buendia. How many number 10s do you want?
Okay, then.
Like what?
I'm trying to think of something that would let him be in London with a team that I think is more suited to his style, despite all his Danish friends that they can
Crystal
sit around.
Crystal Palace, perfect. Go to Crystal Palace.
Oh, yes. And you've got a football coach.
Vieira Ball. You know that goal they scored against Brighton?
Do you think Big Patrick is working on this behind the scenes?
I would love to. Gallagher and Eriksen in midfield. Yes, please.
Lille beat Lorient 3-0, but why are we telling you about mid-table Lille, even though they could go and win the Champions League now that they have signed officially Hatem Ben Arfa?
And Hatem Ben Arfa.
it's another opportunity to get an update on na 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 Botman, Botman, Botman.
No update, I think. I think I really expect him to stay. And for Tim Benalfa, this is great.
Why were you expecting to stay?
Because he's got the Champions League to play. Those clubs would be there in the summer with more money, more offers. All of that. Fellini makes no sense to sell, but they're very happy with Benalfa. I tell you that. He looks really fit. He looks fitter now, after not playing for 6 months, than he was last season at Bordeaux when he was playing, which is great.
So he's not visiting those kebab shops anymore.
Well, doesn't seem the case. Peter Robinson has passed away, age 86, Gab. He was a huge figure at Liverpool.
Yeah, I think it was in like 35 years he spent at the club from... And he kind of experienced the whole arc, right? From the mid-60s, you know, so... right up until the year 2000. So he got to, you know, experience the Shankly,
the really
Paisley
highs,
era.
Yeah.
Those highs, he got to experience, you know, later on, Dalglish. He got experienced, obviously, the tragic days, Heysel, Hillsborough. And then at the end, just sort of the transition to Gerard Houllier after kind of the soonest nightmare. You know, he's just such an important figure in the history of the club. And I think, you know, he had the last 8 years as chief executive, but effectively he was in charge of things before. So, you know, he really took the club into the era. Maybe not, obviously not as successful on the pitch. And, you know, his final year saw the rise of Manchester United, which would have been gutting to him.
Yeah, definitely.
But such an important figure. Union beat Hertha Berlin 3-2 in the DFB Pokal.
Yeah.
Jules, I had to put this in because our producer Freddie is a huge Union fan.
Yeah.
And you know he would have been breaking balls all the time if he didn't talk about
Vogeljammer
or whatever is, you know, scored that goal.
Great first goal. Well done to them. I didn't watch the game, to be honest with you, so I cannot give you any analysis apart from the goals that I saw. Well done. Let's hope they don't win it because then it'd be unbearable, Freddie.
Exactly.
But, you know, well done for winning the derby.
After I think we should start calling him Friedrich.
Friedrich. Well done, Friedrich. After sacking Andrei Shevchenko and being turned down by Bruno Labbadia, Genoa have a new manager, Gab, Alexander Blessin. They're actually now paying, you know, as they do in Italy, they send people on gardening leave, managers. So they're paying four different managers right now.
Yeah, it's absolutely surreal. It's they're paying Shevchenko, they're playing Davide Ballardini, they're playing this guy Blessin. They're playing somebody else, either Maran or Nicola, whatever.
Yeah, who was there before?
I was really surprised by this because I'm going to hazard a guess that most of our listeners, unless they happen to be Belgian or Leipzig fans, have no idea who he is. Because I was like, that name sounds familiar. Is it the same guy? And yes, it is. So Blessing was managing Oostende in Belgium.
Yeah.
He was named manager of the year last year, apparently. Not doing as well this year, but Genoa still had to plunk down and pay his release clause, like the way German clubs do. I think they paid like $2 million or something to get him. He's young. Prior to that, he
was in the RB group.
He was in the RB group. Yeah, he coached under 19s at Leipzig and whatnot. So, on the one hand, you figure, well, progressive choice, not going back to Ballardini for the 99th time in a row.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I don't know.
It's a big risk.
It's a big risk. You got relegation looming.
Yeah.
You know, I think but they've already shown that they're progressive in the sense that they hired a director of football from Holland as well. You know, maybe this is Italian football opening up thanks to the new owners. Maybe that's not bad. I'm curious to see what he does. It was funny because they doorstep this guy, as we often do at the airport. Here in England, I never see it happen.
No,
right?
Really.
It never happens.
Coutinho the other day. Coutinho, they're filming arriving at Birmingham Airport.
Although I was wondering if that was Kia filming him. But, you know, you always have fans and media at the airport when the guy arrives, because he's captive, right? And, you know, they don't get squirreled out the back. And it's like the middle of the night. The airport's literally empty. There's literally like two guys after him. And he's like, so, you know, what do you know about Genoa? He's like, oh, great, heroic club. They won 9 league titles. They were the oldest Serie A club around. Great historically. He repeated the same three things, and I was like, I can just imagine him coming out. Although he did look like he had like a little Genoa face mask.
Oh, I love him.
Unless the Ostende, I honestly don't know. Are Ostende's colors the same as Genoa's?
No.
I don't know. But he was obviously coming out. He doesn't know what to say. He doesn't want to say too much. He's like, let me get the Wikipedia out.
you mean with him, love him.
I hope he does very, very well. He's not going to give you a big squad analysis at that stage. Jules, you love your techers, so I'll let you handle the issue of 15-year-old Brazilian phenom Endrick, who scored a tremendous goal for Palmeiras under-20s against Oeste.
Yeah, amazing goal. It's on your Twitter. You tweeted it on Wednesday. Now,
overhead if you haven't seen it, check this out.
Yeah, overhead kick on the edge of the box. Pretty remarkable, the technical ability, the awareness, everything, the talent. He's clearly an absolute phenomenon. So under 15 playing, 15 years old playing under 20. So as you can all count, there's a 5-year gap, which is pretty rare and pretty special to be already ready physically and technically to play with pretty much a reserve of a first team. Which
and he's still growing. Like, he's not big.
Clearly, but you
and
can
he plays
see,
center forward.
You can see him. Yeah. Clearly, he hasn't finished growing and developing. So pretty remarkable. Keep the name in mind because we can't tell you the level of the under 20 league in Brazil, but certainly in terms of playing with the Brazilian youth teams, maybe with the Palmeiras first team when he makes his debut and all of that, then we'll have a better idea. But he seems very much legit.
Yeah, I think he's already visited the national team. I think he was invited to train with them or to see them. And good news, if you're in Brazil, you get him for at least another 3 years.
Exactly. Francisco Paco Gento has passed away aged 88, Gab. He won 6 European Cups for Real Madrid and he's one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, nobody's won more. Maybe it's a record that won't be broken. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know, Gento was he was a prototypical lightning quick little winger down the side. He played on those tremendous teams with Santa Maria and Di Stefano and Puskas, and just really helped form the legend that is Real Madrid. 88 years, well lived. Right, Jules, we got to come back on Monday because there's so much going on.
Huge
unbelievable. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.